Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Welcome to Bottoming, the LGBTQ mental health podcast about rock bottoming and beyond. Kindly sponsored by Joe Malone London.
Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at BottomingPod or visit bottomingpodcast.com for more content relating to each episode.
We've also added a support page to the website to direct you to the right place if you're struggling or need someone to talk to.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Matthew.
And I'm Brendan, and our pronouns are he and him.
So if you've just joined us for part two and you haven't listened to part one yet, we'd probably recommend jumping back there, listening to Christine Burns, and then come back over here. So off you pop. Okay, and then now, if you have already listened to that, we'll continue. So as we mentioned in episode one, this time we are going to be speaking to Saba Chowdhury, who has done so much work in what seems like a very short space of time as well.
Yeah.
They co-founded Trans Pride Brighton as well. They work for Gender Intelligence. They've done TEDx talks. They've just released a book and a ton of other amazing things. So it was an absolute pleasure to speak to them.
Here's Saba.
Hello, my name is Saba. My pronouns are they, them and theirs. I am a trans youth worker. I'm a psychotherapist in training. I'm a public speaker. And now I guess I can say I'm a published author too.
So, I mean, you mentioned a lot of things there. I want to go back a few years to begin with. You co-founded Trans Pride Brighton in 2013. What was the catalyst for this, just to kick off the conversation?
So all of my kind of work that I do is around community, and a big part of that was the birth of Trans Pride Brighton. I had been kind of collecting, I guess, other queer people of colour, collecting community members and just trying to carve out a space for us because there wasn't one when I was living in Brighton. So I moved there for uni, and then I just ended up staying there because it was, well, it's a lovely town. I was finding community there and building it. And me and a few other trans people and some friends were sitting in, I think it was Moksha Cafe in Brighton. And I'm saying that because it's still there. And I went there recently, actually. So we were just sitting there having a cup of tea and talking about Brighton Pride, because that was coming up. And we were feeling really tired and disappointed and just fed up of just being, as a trans community, just being thought of last or just not taken seriously or not being protected at Brighton Pride events. And we just, you know, we're like, why do we keep going back to Brighton Pride? Why is that a thing? Like, why isn't there another thing? And why don't we do it? Like, we were just talking in really hypotheticals, but then I think we all kind of realized, actually, why can't we just do it? Like, why can't we have our own trans pride event and make it everything that we need and it represent who we actually are and what we want our community, where we want our community to be. So, I mean, I was really nervous and skeptical because, it just was like a really wild idea to think that we were going to just start this pride event. And I didn't really feel the most safest or comfortable being out and visible as like a gender non-conforming person in Brighton. It wasn't the safest and it just felt really difficult.
Mm.
But we actually had some really good contacts. Some people working in the council, some people who worked with Kemp Town Carnival who were cis people, and they really helped us out and they were just like, right, let's do this. Let's do this properly. Let's get together. Let's create a group. And we met weekly at the Marlborough pub, which is now something else, called something else now, but it would always be the Marlborough to me. we met there and, you know, it just started happening and everyone was excited about it, which is the thing that I will always remember. You know, everybody wanted this to happen. Like, everybody needed this to happen. Not just trans people, but our friends, cis people, our family members, our loved ones, like the people who, you know, we buy coffee from every day. Like, it was just this massive warm energy that just really enabled it to happen. And it did happen. And it happened, like, so much better than any of us could have thought. Like, I think we anticipated maybe like a few hundred people were going to be there turning up in this little park, but the number was like, was it like 1,000 or like, it was much higher.
Yeah.
And I just remember being told that from the, from like the people who were kind of doing the counting at the gate.
Yeah.
And we were just like, wait, what? Like, this is... no way. Like, no way. And that was the first year. And now it's in its, oh God, it's been going since 2013. And I'm not very good at maths. So you're going to help me out this one.
I mean, we're getting up to year 9, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you back this year? Is it a physical pride again this year?
I'm not sure. So I was on the kind of, board or committee for maybe 4 or 5 years. And then I left Brighton anyway. So I've not been involved in any of the planning, but I've been going back there every year, I think, actually, with my trans youth group at Gender Intelligence. So it's been a really nice way to keep connected to it, you know, and bringing down like a group of trans youth from, well, not just from London, but from like, you know, different parts of the UK to be like, hey, look, this is our community. This is your community too. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. How do they respond to it?
Oh my God. They can't believe it. It's that same like feeling that I will still get every year when you just look at like the number of people that are there, who are there for this one purpose of like loving, supporting, protecting, celebrating trans people.
Mm.
And there's nothing like it. Like it's so, you feel so safe and seen and visible and like no one's, and you haven't even set foot there. Like it's just, it's incredible. It's a really important part of our youth work, you know, taking young people to pride events and showing them community and letting them figure out themselves. Yeah.
So you've also held the stage and given a TEDx talk, Brown, Trans, Muslim and Proud, and it received an amazing response. How was that experience for you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I forget I did that. it was, yeah, that was, what was it, 2015. That was, yeah, that was a really, like, scary and, like, one-of-a-kind experience. Mm. I mean, I had been doing public speaking for a couple of years. I mean, I was really, it was really nerve-wracking, and I wasn't very good at it, I don't think, but, you know, I still tried. I still took to the stage. I can just, like, the number of times I could just look at my hands and, like, my paper's shaking, and I'm like, oh. Okay. and then, oh, actually, it was one of my friends who volunteered for TEDx Brixton, like, the event, and was like, you know, they look for people who have stories to tell and who are different, and I think you should apply for it. And I was like, you know, all that kind of self-doubt and, mm-hmm. But who am I? Like, what's my story? What's the point of it? And then I got accepted onto, yeah, to deliver a TED talk. It was a really cool process. Like, even just the process itself was really significant. Like, we met up regularly as a group. We went through, you know, like, kind of practical things around how to give a talk, like, just your presence, your cadence, like, how to tell a story, and then just, like, really working together with someone on, yeah, what is a story you want to tell? How do we make this something that, you know, people will remember and think about and take away with them? So it helped me in terms of being a good speaker and being able to feel confident in what I'm saying, but also confident in my own experience. Like, yeah, I do have a story to tell, and the things I have experienced do matter. And that was really incredible. And then for it to be, you know, viewed by, well, you know, the world, like, it's on a public platform. It's just really quite something. And I mean, the reason I wanted to do it, I think the reason I ever wanted to write publicly or, you know, step foot on a stage was to be that person I needed when I was younger. You know, I didn't see anyone who would have ever had those kind of identity markers next to their name in public, let alone, you know, on a delivering a TED talk or doing whatever. So it's really been, yeah, for me as well as for everyone else. But I think now when I see or hear from, you know, some young people or other viewers that, like, you know, I've, you know, you're the first, you know, that this kind of person I've ever met, and I haven't heard this story before, or, you know, I felt alone, and I'm just like, that's how I felt, and I'm just so happy that this exists for this person to be able to, yeah, to feel validated, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, the numbers on the video are definitely stacked up as well. they're definitely on the up. So that, yeah, that, and as you say, it's good that it's always out there as well, because you just don't know when someone's going to come across it and it's going to help them in that way.
Yeah, so totally.
You mentioned gender intelligence and the work you do there. You've also got a degree in psychology and a background in counselling. We are a mental health podcast, so obviously this is one of the big questions we wanted to ask.
Oh, yes.
How do you think that this work has helped shape what you do, both at Gendered Intelligence, but also the other work as well?
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. There's this really lovely crossover between our youth workers and, you know, those with, like, counselling skills or listening skills. It matches really well. And because our work is a lot about listening, but it's also a lot about power, which I will explain. It's I think one of the most amazing things I learned from my psychotherapy training was about power and your power as a practitioner, as a therapist, and having, you know, you being in a power dynamic with your client, with the person in front of you. And how does that interact with the relationship? How does that make that person feel? And how can you still manage to hold a space that's listening and caring with that in mind? And when it comes to, like, you know, gender or race or other kinds of differences in identity, it's really important that we recognize that we have power. And the same with youth work, you know, we're adults in the space. Mm-hmm. We are youth workers as well. We're going to hold power. And I think what it is about both roles for me is about being responsible with that power. and being transparent about it, and that hopefully enabling, yeah, the person, young person or client in front of me to feel empowered to decide what they want to do, or to come to me with what they need or something like that. But yeah, mental health has always been, I did psychology at uni when I went to Brighton, and my mom worked in the mental health in NHS. So it's just been like, yeah, it's always been a part of my life actually. Mm. And I think, you know, having my own experiences of counseling when I was a child and a young person and at uni, I think it's just been, yeah, a knowledge that we all have it.
Yeah.
And just, you know, trying to ensure that I'm not making assumptions about other people's experiences. Like, yeah, we might all be trans people in this space, but we've still taken completely different journeys and have different needs. So yeah, that's something that's also I've been able to put in with my youth work and training.
Yeah, just embedded into everything that you do, which is, I mean, it's surprising that a lot of people just don't have any knowledge or understanding of that as well. And the importance of making sure that it's not just an add-on, it needs to be like a constant thread, doesn't it? So,
Congratulations is in order, obviously. So you recently won the Amplifon Future Fighter Award at the Gay Times Honours. How was that for you?
Oh, thank you so much. I think the last year has just been kind of a whirlwind. Like, I've been getting, you know, way more involved with youth work and my writing, and I think I just forget that, like, people do take notice of the stuff that I'm doing. People are watching in a creepy way, but like it's having an impact on other people. So I think I just forget that. And then when I knew I was going to be receiving this award, I think I was, yeah, it was again those moments of like the self-doubt kind of voice of like, but really, like, I'm not, like, I don't even do that much, or I haven't done anything that really, you know, matters. But I had a chat with myself and my inner critic and was like, you know what, just accept it. Like, just trust in whoever else has made this happen, and the other people who were telling me congratulations, like yourselves, and just hear that there's something there. Okay. And I can question it later, or I can question it in therapy. Like, it's fine. I think I realized, like, I put a lot of pressure on myself, or have high expectations of like what it looks like to be someone important or someone who, you know, quote unquote succeeds or achieves, whatever that means. And I think that kind of got to me where I was like, but I'm in this lineup with all these, like, you know, celebrities or influencers or whatever. But that's the thing I want to critique. Like, I don't want to fall into that. I want to remember that doesn't mean anything, but we're on the same kind of footing. And they shouldn't have a higher position starting point or whatever than I do.
Yeah.
So I think it helped me to see that and remember that. But yeah, those kinds of pressures, I think I've also increased over the last couple of years. I think with just by having more of an online life and everything being kind of, you really have to show what you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure my way out of that, and I guess kind of stay true to myself.
Yeah.
If that doesn't sound too cliche.
It is hard to consolidate sometimes, I guess, isn't it? That you kind of obviously are doing the work for the purest reason, because you want to change people's lives because of your own experiences and things that are fed into it. But then there is that almost brand aspect to work people do these days, which is almost that you have to have this persona or some sort of, like you say, online presence to talk about all those different things. But then again, you kind of are welcoming additional things like outside criticism or like praise in your sense. But I guess it is when it doesn't either come naturally, or it kind of contradicts what you're doing it for. I guess that is quite tricky to consolidate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you mentioned you're also a writer amongst all of the other things that you do, and you've got a new book, Supporting Trans People of Colour, How to Make Your Practice Inclusive. It's just been released. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and I guess why you wanted to write that and put that out there?
So it's just been out for a few weeks now, which is really exciting. It is what it says it is. It is a kind of practical guide on how to make your practice inclusive. And I guess by practice, I mean like whatever it is that you're doing that is about services or community or teaching or people. I think it's a book that is for anyone who works with people, because if you work with people, then chances are you'll be working with trans people of color at some point. And I mean, it's a starting point. You know, these conversations around inclusivity are always ongoing. And I wanted this to be a starting point for people who, you know, would come to me for with questions and want me to talk about certain things. And it's been great, but it's also been tiring. And I think I know that people on the margins often have to do a lot of the educating around how to make spaces better for us or safer for us, which is useful, but it can weigh on us a lot, right? So I kind of wanted everything to be in one place. It's not going to stop those conversations. In fact, it's kind of spurred some of them on. People are like, see, you've written about this book, like come and talk to us about it, like tell us more. But it's nice that it's there. And it doesn't matter so much for me, but I think, you know, I've heard from a couple of other trans people of color, they're just like, I'm going to give people this when they ask me about this. And that makes me feel better. If I can save some of those, expectations of free labor from other trans people of color, then that's a good feeling. It's practical. It's, you know, a bit about history. It's got a lot of questions for reflections. It's about ourselves, about our own power and privilege as well. There's some examples in there too, but really it's I wanted it to just show how, I guess, diverse and expansive and brilliant our trans people of color communities are. You know, we're not homogenous. I'm writing from my own perspective. I don't represent everyone. So I've tried to include as many different voices in it as I can, which to me feels like it's a celebration of our communities for me. You know, I hold this book and I'm like, it makes me really happy, like just to know how many other people are in there. I wasn't feeling very happy about it when I had to write it. And I was like, oh my God, the words and hitting all those, like, you know, the walls. But it feels so happy that I've done this. And everything and everyone has just kind of come together in it.
And then just to plug it, where can people listen and buy it?
It's available on most online booksellers, but I've been, you know, having some conversations with local LGBT and independent bookshops around the UK about they've got some stock in there as well. You can order direct from Jessica Kingsley Publishers. They've got shops in the US and Australia as well, which is pretty cool. But yeah, you can follow the hashtag supporting TPOC as well. You want to share and like send a little pic of you with the book. It's making me so happy seeing people like, I've got it.
Amazing.
So as this is LGBT History Month, what would be your key reflection this year?
I mean, I'm thinking about this message being for like LGBTQ people. And I would say like make time to look after yourself and celebrate yourself as well. Yes, it's LGBT History Month, and yes, there's so much education and acknowledgement that we need to do as a community, between us. But do take a moment for yourself as well. Like, it can be a really tough month. Like, I know it's often a very tiring month for me, you know, having to do lots of different things or just being aware of like this kind of increase in visibility, which can also feel really strange. Just make sure you just have some time for your mental health, like just talk to your friend. Oh my God, my favorite thing to do is like hanging out with other trans people and just talking about everything else that is not trans related. Like just having the most like goofy conversations, and it's just that is so nourishing and healing. Like There's nothing like that. And that to me is like looking after mental health. That is community care, that's self-care. So yeah, making sure you're doing that. And yeah, celebrating yourself. Like, I think it's really nice to take a moment to kind of acknowledge our own histories and whether that is, you know, hundreds of years ago or even just like, you know, the last 5 years, just taking that moment to, yeah, just be like, okay, yeah, I'm here, I made it.
One thing we did touch on very briefly, mm-hmm. I did mention about the EHRC last week.
Yeah.
The Equality and Human Rights Commission, and the statement they put out, and it being obviously anti-trans because that's where the EHRC are at the moment. That developed over the week, mm-hmm. Since. Loads of other organisations have publicly called them out, have either cut ties with them and or publicly put statements out. Because they're just not fit to be an equality or human rights commission, which, you know, that's the name, so that's what they should be doing. But Ben Hunt, who was the BBC's LGBT correspondent, is now at Vice. He has been releasing some incredible exclusives that I assume he was maybe not allowed to release under the BBC, mm-hmm. For various reasons. But one of the latest ones that he shared was actually about the EHRC and how the person at the very, very top has been changing different reports and research and things to essentially make them anti-trans, like completely rewriting findings and statements and different parts. And it was a load of LGBT staff that spoke to Ben for Vice, just about the culture there right now, which is, I think one of the quotes was, I don't want to work somewhere that's like targeting LGBT people like this. Like, as a queer person, I can't be a part of that. So it's just like another instance of, I guess, British institutions that are just institutionally transphobic, mm-hmm. Which is why, you know, like Saba's book and like some of the work Christine's done and the books that Christine has mentioned, it's really worth checking them out and getting to grips, I guess, with some of this conversation, because, you know, people still tend to be nervous about conversing, and we're way past that point now.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, again, just wanted to raise that briefly, especially given the topics we've spoken about this time around.
Mm-hmm. Positive thing of the week. Oh. We need some positivity here, Matthew.
Oh, okay. Okay, my positive thing of the week. Because we spent so much time in this room week. Because Sam was obviously injured. It really got to me, this space. I know last time I mentioned the Robin poster, that was a little tiny fix. But I rearranged the room on Saturday in like an hour of hysteria. I don't know where I found the strength to move the bed and all the shit with it, but yeah, I moved that around for a little change, so this still looks the same where we're sat right now, but the rest of it's slightly adjusted, and it just made me feel a lot better. And I also need to find a place for a gift that Ben bought me, actually, modern Japanese architecture, and it is a whopper of a book.
Oh my god! Over there.
So they're my positive things of the week, because, and also I'm just grateful, again, as I mentioned episode one, for all of my friends.
Oh.
Because they're all amazing. You're amazing. Everyone's amazing. That didn't sound sincere, but honestly, it's been really important the last week or so.
Hard time. My positive thing of the week was my mum came down to London yesterday. Yeah, we had a lovely time. Went to a museum. We went to lots of cafes. We basically just ate and drank all day, and it was all around the towns. It was the life of luxury.
Oh.
Yeah, it was really gorgeous and cozy, and yeah, it was perfect. So loved it, Mum. Thanks for coming down. So yeah, that's my positive thing of the week.
One more thing.
Yeah,
I just want to very quickly highlight, if you are in London and around, obviously I mentioned the work that I do currently.
I forgot to take a picture. I saw one yesterday.
You did?
Yeah, where? With my mum. Tottenham Court Road.
Ah. Oh. So what we're talking about is Tonichausen, the UK's first LGBT retirement community.
Never heard of it.
I've spoken about credits a lot over the last year. We have just launched our very first street advertising campaign. It's really, really lovely. And seeing LGBT living on billboards around London and also the faces of like the people in the photography is just amazing. So if you are around London and see it, they're usually bright and pink with a really smiley person or two on them.
Mm-hmm.
Take a picture, tag Atomichausen on Twitter and Instagram, because we would love to see them out and about. So yeah, thank you.
See it, say it, sorted.
Yeah. That is your LGBT History Month lot.
We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, it'll be great if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And also, you can now star rate us on Spotify.
Mm-hmm. Which we've seen a few people have done, actually, so thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that.
For doing that, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
So yeah, tell your friends. Share your episode on Instagram if you're listening. We'd like to see that as well.
Get yeah, do. People
to listen to some of the really amazing voices that we've managed to chat to.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, we will see you again in 2 weeks' time. As always, you're doing so amazing, sweetie.
You're doing amazing, sweetie.
Goodbye.
Bye.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.